Every single one of us matters. Every single one of us has some role to play.
We are all in this together.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the special Earth Day episode of the Sustainable Hour. We'd like to acknowledge that we're on the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to the elders, past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. As befitting on that Earth Day, which emphasises something that was very, very common for them, their care for country and care for community. We have a great appreciation for the acquired ancient wisdom that they have, something that they acquired over millennia until their land was stolen. And it's important if we want to survive the climate crisis to have that set of values guiding us.
Today is Earth Day, a day that reminds us not only of the beauty of our planet, but of our shared responsibility to protect it, starting where we live. This year's Earth Day theme is Our Power, Our Planet. It is a powerful reminder that protecting the environment is not something that happens somewhere else. It happens in our homes, in our workplaces, and in communities like Geelong. Here we are incredibly fortunate. We live, work and play alongside our beautiful north-facing bay, Barwon River and Great Ocean Road. We have access to national parks and our much-loved Yuyangs, as well as wetlands, farmland and open spaces that support both wildlife and livelihoods. These landscapes shape who we are as a region, providing clean water, fresh air, food, recreation and a strong sense of belonging. And when I think about these beautiful natural assets that I have enjoyed as a child and as an adult, I want to ensure that others get to enjoy that natural beauty and for generations to come. We are also lucky to be part of a region that produces world-class food and wine, made possible by healthy land, clean water and a favourable climate. From the Bellarine Peninsula with its farms and wineries to the Great Ocean Road and Geelong's north-facing waterfront. These places are not only economic assets, they are central to our identity. Preserving these areas is vital if they are to continue supporting our community and future generations. We are also fortunate that this land has been cared for over 10,000 years by the Wathaurong people. We acknowledge that we have much to learn from First Peoples. When it comes to caring for and protecting country, we must embrace deep listening, but we still have a long way to go. Earth Day began on the 22nd of April 1970, when communities came together in their millions to demand action on pollution and environmental damage. What started as a grassroots movement led to lasting change and has since grown into a global event, now celebrated by more than a billion people each year. The message then, as it is now, was simple. When people stand together, change is possible. But we also know these environments are under pressure from climate change, pollution, waste, and the loss of habitat. We see it when our rivers run low, when coastal erosion threatens our foreshores, or when extreme weather impacts our communities and water security is high on our agenda. And that is why Earth Day matters. Our power, our planet, reminds us that solutions are not only global, they are local. Power sits with communities who choose to care for waterways, reduce waste, support renewable energy, protect biodiversity, and speak up for the environment that we will leave for future generations. Across Geelong, we already see this power in action through community cleanups, sustainability groups, conservation efforts, local libraries, schools, volunteers, and organisations working every day to protect what we value most. I've enjoyed many conversations with school students about climate change. These kids are the change makers of our future. Each day is not about perfection. It is about commitment. It is about recognising that every action, no matter how small, adds up when we work together. Protecting our planet and environment locally to ensure that Geelong remains a healthy, vibrant place to live for our children and for generations to come. This is a commitment we can all work towards.
Thank you, Kristen Cousins, our member for Geelong in the Victorian Parliament. Something is beginning to shift. With the help of AI, artificial intelligence, the researchers, the scientists are uncovering structures in whale communication that we simply were not able to perceive before. And it's not just the clicks and the calls. It's the patterns, the rhythms, the dialects even, and the different sounds that, you know, are hidden in the in these codas of the whales. And when researchers speed up the recordings and remove the silences, suddenly these clicks and calls resolve into a stable spectral shape, which is the whale's equivalent to vowels. So, machine learning is beginning to map out like sentences, identifying markers and emotional tones, clan-specific variations, and so on. And independent teams across the world are beginning to find the same thing. Whale communication is far more complex and structured and culturally transmitted than we ever imagined. We can't yet translate exactly what the whales are saying to each other. We can't sit beside the whales and begin to understand their conversations. Not yet. It may actually come. The point is that we're beginning to recognize something which is quite mind-blowing and maybe even unsettling, which is that this is actually a language. Once we have discovered that language, once we have understood the language of the whales, it's going to challenge one of the deepest assumptions that we humans carry around about ourselves, which is that communication and meaningful conversation and so on belongs only to us humans. I don't think we even need to fully decode what the whales are saying to each other. What we already know now is that they matter, that they live in complex social groups, that they form long-term bonds, they learn from one another, they pass on behavior, and they stay connected across time. We've seen in the whales what looks like grief. We've seen them cooperate. And we've seen something that actually resembles culture. And I think that's really, really important when it comes to a day like today, Earth Day. Because Earth Day is so much about how we relate to the non-human life on planet Earth. These beings all belong to Earth. And the story that we humans tell about ourselves needs to change. And it even needs to change into the way, you know, we rule the world, our laws. Many of the rules that govern our societies were written in a time when we did not understand the world as we do now. The laws think that the oceans are empty. And now we are finding the oceans are not empty. There's living beings who are communicating, who have culture in the oceans. If we look at, you know, the different animal types that are out there, the dolphins, of course, are known for that they have their whistles. They use them as, you know, calling each other names even. But so do the flying foxes. We've heard that in the Sustainable Hour in the in the recent months here that the flying foxes actually have names for their babies, and they are distinct. They recognize one baby from another by its name. And everyone who owns a dog knows that dogs read our human emotions and they understand us, but we don't always understand them. Horses communicate. Even pigs, you know, who we don't normally, you know, recognize as even as animals in a way, they're just food, aren't they? They communicate joy and stress, and they have also complex vocal patterns. So, I think if Earth Day means anything, it is that our laws, like our stories, need to evolve now. Our understanding needs to evolve, and responsibility for all life on planet Earth is something that we need to build into our structures that shape our worlds. This huge circle of beings on planet Earth matter. So I would say to Earth and to all the life on Earth, including us humans, but also the whales and our friends and family, I would say happy Earth Day. We are together. And let's live from that understanding. Let's live in that truth. Having said that, it's time, even today, for the global outlook and for the news from around the world. And we have standing here today, Colin Mockett, OAM, ready with the news. Colin, so let's hear what you have for us today.
Well, thank you, Mick. And my roundup this week begins in Santa Marta, Colombia, where after Earth Day from April the 24th to the 29th, Colombia and the Netherlands are co-hosting the first conference on transitioning away from fossil fuels. That's a meeting. It's an event that's stated purpose is to build a coalition of actionable science-based plans that will phase out fossil fuels, address the gaps in traditional UN climate talks. That's their words. Putting it in plain language, they're saying that the COP meetings don't work. Therefore, they're setting up an alternative one which will. In their words again, the initiative follows a lack of a firm phase-out agreement at COP30, and that led Colombia and the Netherlands to spark talks amongst willing nations away from the fossil industry's lobbyists. There are roughly 46 nations already signed up, including Brazil, Canada, Germany, Norway, France, Spain, Vanuatu, Palau, Tuvalu, and Australia. That's a nice thing. We're actually going to this meeting. The conference is seen as a critical step in building a framework of similar world treaties for eliminating other dangerous materials aimed directly at the root cause of the climate crisis, which is fossil fuels. Santa Marta is a coal exporting port, and the first conference being cited there is no accident. It's seen as being the crucial first step towards a formal fossil fuel treaty negotiations. The talk's primary outcome is clear. It must acknowledge the need for negotiation of a new international treaty that would regulate fossil fuels and kickstart a process for willing countries to tackle fossil fuels together. Achieving this milestone will build a momentum for a second international conference, and that's slated to be hosted by Tuvalu in the Pacific within a year, where a formal mandate to negotiate a fossil fuel treaty is already on the agenda. So this is a way of sort of sidestepping and bypassing the failed COP lot of talks, and it's, couldn't give it more publicity. It's wonderful in my book. If we can manage to do that and get it out of the hands of the fossil fuel multinationals, so much the better. But now to Paris, with the International Energy Agency's release of its 2025 Global EV Outlook report. The report's conclusion was that the world's EV revolution is shifting. It's shifting from light to heavy vehicles and doing so at an astonishing pace. It recorded an 80% increase in electric truck sales globally in 2024, the last full year of figures. there's been an almost six-fold increase in the number of available models. There are now more than 400 available electric prime mover models, six-fold since 2020. More recent data published by CV World is even more startling. Total registrations of what it's called new energy vehicles was up 182% year-on-year in China in 2025. That's more than 45,000 heavy-duty electric trucks that were registered. That's 54% of total registrations. And that was just in the month of December 2025. Most importantly for Australia, the IEA data completely rubbished our Parliament's Conservative opposition's constant claims that EV trucks can't work in Australia because their capacity is less and their range is too low. They prove without doubt that it is possible to move cattle or steel or toilet paper or anything else around Australia on giant semi-trailers with an electric prime mover at the front, and they'll do it quicker and more efficiently than diesel. It's already happening in much of the rest of the world, and now belatedly it's happening here. Advances in batteries and charging infrastructure are catalysts. The new heavy-duty electric trucks can travel fully loaded for 400 to 500 kilometres on a single charge. And that makes them suitable for most regional Australian freight routes and long-distance corridors. Add to this that a new generation of megawatt charging infrastructure, which makes it possible for an electric semi to charge from 20% to 80% in less than 30 minutes. So while you're at a truck stop, they can charge up while they're having a hamburger and chips. The one trialled in Australia is a Chinese-made B-double-rated Windrose prime mover. Over the past 6 months, the New South Wales company of New Energy Transport has used its Windrose truck in a series of trials, including the one that was reported in the media. Then the truck completed a 480-kilometre round trip from Picton, south of Sydney, to Beresfield in the Hunter region on a single charge with a load of chicken feed. Now, this was no speciality arranged trip. It was run a normal run, and the truck met all relevant laws and regulations. But what it did do was impress both the driver and the truck company about the relative merits of electric versus diesel. What particularly impressed the driver was its power. The Windrose produces 1,400 horsepower compared with 500 to 700 from a typical diesel, which enables it to maintain its speed even up steep hills. The driver said he couldn't repeat exactly what the other truck drivers said over their two-way radios when I was flying past them up Mount White, he said. The gist of it was, he said, they were very expletive deleted impressed. And because the Windrose was able to sit at the speed limit the whole way, the trip was completed 40 minutes faster than it would have been under diesel power. Moreover, the fuel cost was a fraction of the diesel alternative. And Daniel Bleakley, who's co-founder and co-chief executive of New Air Energy Transport, said we used 600 kilowatt hours at 15 cents wholesale renewable energy price. So it cost us about $50 up and back for a 36-ton combination. That trip normally costs around $300 worth of diesel, and that's at old pre-Iran war prices. So you can add another 30% on that. He said that a delivery from Sydney to Canberra with a load of toilet paper from Who Gives a Crap cost 84% less than the equivalent diesel run, based on current prices. In another trial covering one of the steepest major trucking routes in the country, he said this particular truck, the Windrose, hauled 68 tonnes of steel from BlueScope Steelworks in Port Kembla up to Mount Owsley, passing diesel trucks like they weren't even moving. It was able to hold the speed limit all the way into Sydney and back again. It could run two of those loops on one charge. He said the big difference was that the changeover was a matter of capital cost versus operating cost. The existing diesel road freight industry is very low capital expenditure, but high operating expenditure, he said. So you might buy a new truck for $250,000. You then run it up and down the Hume Highway doing 200,000 kilometres a year, and you'll spend about $2 million on diesel over 10 years. Electric trucking is the opposite. It's high capital, but low operating expenses. The trucks are more expensive up front. The Windrows cost $450,000. That's not quite double the cost of a diesel. And you have to pay for charging infrastructure. But the benefits on the operating side are so huge that the overall cost over 20 years, we believe, is now much, much lower than diesel. And to keep the good news coming, Forest Green Rovers beat Braintree Town 3-1 at the weekend, leaving them in sixth place on the ladder. And that completes my roundup for the week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Earth Day is a very significant day, particularly where we are at the moment. I mean, in geopolitical and all the things that are going on in the world. And I think it's sad that we've got to the stage where we have to wait for all these things to happen before we say, why don't we get an electric car now?
Yeah.
Take them 20 years before we realise
we should... Are we recording this?
We are.
Good.
We should get an electric car, or we should get solar panels, or we should try and maintain the world without having such a reliance on oil. But it's taken us this stage, and we've been had warnings for way over 20 years, and now people are starting to realise, well, if you don't do something about it, it's going to get you in the end anyway. So that's a thing that's had to have happened. So hopefully people can take a lesson from this and learn that, you know, if we don't look after the planet, we won't have a planet anymore.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Leo Rinkin, the Pulse station manager through more than a decade.
So our next guest today is John Schoen, who will be talking today on earthmarks, which we all will all get because we all got our hands in the earth today later on. But John will explain exactly what he means by that. But I'd like to open, if I can, John, by asking you, what does Earth Day mean to you?
Thank you, Colin, and the audience out there in Radio Land. Earth Day is very special to me. It reminds me of my maternal grandfather, who, when I was an eight-year-old boy, he invited me to sit with him on the banks of the Glenelg River at Balmoral in Western Victoria. And he taught me how to be still with nature. He taught me how to catch a fish. It took me 8 hours to catch that first fish, and he suggested to me, in fact, he instructed me, to let it go. He said, you can eat the second one, but not the first. And so Earth Day, for me, is about remembering Grandfather Bloomfield on the banks of the Glenelg River, where the family, my great-grandparents, ran a market garden for the village. And it also reminds me of the market garden and the urban farm that my father's grandfather, my great-grandfather, established in West Footscray, and how government told us as a family in 1975 to close down the urban farm, having been told after the gold rush when the family arrived in Footscray that they should grow their own food. So Earth Day to me is, how is the earth, A, to be respected, A, to be connected with, A, to be part of, and thou will go on to be, and B, to restore, and C, to derive nutrition from. That's my long version of a short answer, Colin, to Earth Day.
Well, look, that's excellent, John, but can you tell me, what was the purpose of not eating the first fish you catch, but only eating the second?
Grandfather, when I got over the sadness of not eating the first, explained to me that that fish was not big enough. And so he taught me about when was a fish ready to be eaten and how might I prepare it. But more importantly, he reminded me that I was dependent upon that fish. And so that first loss of my first fish caught made me remember that I have to put some effort and some thinking into how big is the fish and how much do I need to eat.
I like that. So I'm presuming that if you'd have caught the big one first, he would have taught you how to share.
He would have. And you've led me to talk about what I have done in a prior Earth Day of a 5-kilo salmon, which I shared with, I thought 12 people were going to eat that salmon, and it was with the Chinese Consul General for Victoria, and he came to open the exhibition of some Chinese banners that had been prepared in 1865 by people in China saying thank you to the people of Beechworth for not massacring Chinese people on the Beechworth goldfields. And there's a ritual with sharing a fish with a Chinese dignitary, is that each of the guests must have a smaller fish. Well, too many guests came and I had to quickly find smaller fish, and I had to beg permission from the Chinese Consul General that I could share his fish with the uninvited guests. And he said yes.
Ah, that's almost biblical. You didn't have any bread as well, did you?
From the Beechworth Bakery, we did.
Now listen, tell us about Earth Marks.
Well, I'm going to speak in to the audience, Colin, so bear with me. This might take 3 minutes to answer. And I'm inviting everyone out there in Radioland to find somewhere quiet or noisy, but certainly next to something that is very natural, something which you might connect with Earth Day. And I'd like you to be very reflective, as I'd be reflective, because my dear friend Mick asked me a few days ago to reflect on what Earth Day means. Well, what it means for me, in short, but probably for about 3 minutes of talking, is my earth mark, my footsteps in village each day known, so that others might navigate their own earth mark, each seeking harmony with nature and humans, all marked as earth. You know, I am trademarking my earth mark. Remember your first walk to your mother's arms, in your childhood garden, to early learning and schools thereafter, to work each day and at times lost, to teenage and adult hides, on those adventures remembered, at rituals heartfelt, during obligations required. So how might you picture nature then and now? That's starting to help you think about what your earth mark is, and you might like to trademark it, and I'll mention more of that later. Where is your furrow on this earth today? At what do your feet feel, your hands rub, your nose smell, your ears hear, your lips purse, your mouth taste, and your skin and hair's sense in ecosystems depleted, less nurturing today? What might our parallel minds remember of Earth experienced in past times, urging which stories for us to tell others of Earth Day today? Imagine if all that you take from this Earth each day is sequestered in a village earth garden with trees co-named as us, in soils cultivated by villagers, all co-owned by nature and us. I say it again, all co-owned by nature as us, quite different to freehold as that which we know. But now, if you are co-named and co-owned by nature as us, cooperating in village as nature restored, perhaps that is Earth Day every day. Imagine yourself as 700 mature trees on 7,000 square metres of village forest as your earth print. Your earth print. Not your family's, not your neighbours. Your earth print. That's the freehold that you have as part of the mutual ownership of the forest. Imagine again 700 trees as you. Reflecting upon Earth Day 2026, Colin, I'm caused to ponder my experiences in many places, but of some places in particular, lived and toiled, learned from forever. And I'll just dot point them for myself. And as I'm speaking to you all out there, you might like to think of the places that are traumatic for you, joyful for you, harmonious for you. So here's my list. Food security at Urban Farm, Summerhill Road, West Footscray. Taken from us by government. Asked to be put there by us, by government. Childhood play amidst industrial pollution on Stony Creek, Tottenham, Victoria. An automotive factory, a carpet factory, a caterpillar factory, an Air Force base, a polluted creek where boyhood to manhood was a test for me as an eight-year-old boy. Being at one with nature on Glenelg River, Balmoral, I spoke of that earlier, catching the fish, letting it go, learning how to be comfortable with that, becoming aware of what sharing means. As opposed to witnessing desertification of the Murray-Darling Basin following colonial settlement, massacres of Aboriginal people. Grandfather that day on the Glenelg River when I was 8 told me that I should always, when seeing an Aboriginal person, as the words were used then, I should look at that person and say sorry. This was 1958, not the sorry ceremony in Canberra many years later. And grandfather told me that our family, his grandfather, my great-grandfather, murdered Aboriginal people when they landed with the Henty brothers at Portland. That was not a good Earth Day for anyone. And I remember that each Earth Day as well. In fact, I remember it every day. Coal extraction and industrial collapse in the Hunter Valley. That was my experience in working on the closure of the Newcastle Steelworks, learning that pollution was sanctioned, pollution is subsidised, pollution is permitted. Odd that that should be the case. Criminal that that should be the case. I've spent most of my life turning schmuck into schmick, with displaced tradies, now guild artisans. That all happened in a time when industrial peace was broken by corporations, mainly global, who wanted to break the backs of the unions, ask the people to become contractors, ask the worker to be vulnerable, ask the family to be without security. Not the lucky country that I was born into in 1950. I do have joys of our national capital, foraging edible landscapes for food daily for 1 year in 2002. How did I do that? I was blessed with having received a copy of Marion Marnie Griffin's Canberra Food Garden Handbook, and the joy of that handbook being co-read by Ngunnawal elders, each of us realising that the knowledge of the food on the nature strip was actually planted there at Marion's instruction, based on her knowledge of the natural foods that grow in the streetscapes of 32 countries, placed on an unceded land as a national capital. But I was able to eat Irish wild strawberries, Japanese plums, by simply reading Marion's book as I strolled each day, just after dawn, around Old Canberra. Then, you know, that experience causes me to reflect on collaborating with smallholder artisan food makers on the Campaspe and Colobin Rivers, not the Glenelg, but in the Macedon Ranges, Daleswood and Harcourt Valley. And then again, in recent times, treading polluted foreshore at St Leonard's on the Bellarine, having to check what colour the water is and will it give me an infected ear, will it cause me to get gastro. As I look to the east, I see the Corio Bay, I see the refinery. Oh, I noticed that it's a northeasterly. Better not swim today, too brown, too nasty, sore ear. A bit different to walking on UNESCO World Heritage Ice Age landscape on Sjællandsøerne, Denmark, with a 10th generation farming family impacted by PFAS that they've identified as having come on Pacific and Atlantic waters with the Gulf Stream assistance from Chile. PFAS in Denmark from Chile puts a new spin on global trade. Yep, there's always joy where there's horror. Immersed in ancient farmed forests in Australia, Austria and Finland reminds me that I need to plant 700 trees, mature ones. Well, what's that going to cost me? Somewhere between $100 and $500 each. How will I do that? Well, superannuation, I suppose. Time to spend what I should have been spending long ago. I'm 76, should have been spending that from when I first started getting a wage, probably when I first started getting pocket money. So remember, think about what is your earthmark. What is your earthmark in your village? Remember what I said at the beginning of this, my footsteps on earth each day known so that others might navigate their own treadmark, earthmark, each seeking harmony with nature and humans, all marked as earth. I'll remind you again, my earthmark is being trademarked. Yes, I say. Yes, you as an Australian can trademark your village earthmark. But it's difficult, the name, if the name is purely descriptive or geographical, as it must distinguish your specific service from others' service. It must be your earthmark. It must be John Schoen earthmark. To succeed, the mark generally needs to be stylized, a unique logo. I think we're all unique. Facial recognition proves that, doesn't it? My goodness, who owns that? It's important that you own your earthmark or have acquired distinctiveness through long-time use by being known. Thank you for being known on Earth Day.
Our next guest is at great expense to the management, is Robert Patterson. And Robert, come up and spare out your words of wisdom.
Thanks, Tony and Colin and Mick. My name's Robert, and I've come along to today to Earth Day is here again, and it encases an enormous amount of cross-section of the community. What I'm interested in is that shelter is a human right, and unfortunately our community in Geelong and across much of the country, if not all the country, is lacking homes, especially for people that are not able to find accommodation. But there is some good news, and the good news today is a number of Geelong people are promoting and now building a tiny house in Port Arlington. And this tiny house is all but finished. The plaster is there today. The decking was put together yesterday by some of our local community. And the aim is to build a number of these tiny houses in Geelong. And this is why we've come along this morning to the Pulse and to join the Sustainable Hour. And so what we're needing is accommodation for people that are struggling for accommodation. There's lots of people that are on couches and in cars, and I think that if we could build 200 or 300 of these tiny homes in Geelong, and there's plenty of blocks of land that are 600 square metres, so that gives great opportunity to put two of these in the backyard of a block of land that may be owned by the council or a church or the government. But what we need is you, the people of Geelong. We need the council, we need state and federal government to assist us in Geelong with this project. I think that's what I've got to say on it, Colin, at this stage, and wish everybody the best for Earth Day.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Look, just a quick definition. What's the difference between a tiny house and a granny flat, if you're going to put it in your garden?
Yeah, that's a good question, Colin. A granny flat's well known. The thing was with a granny flat in previous years, and this is going back, I understand, 20 years, that you could put a granny flat in the back of your block of land. Mm-hmm. However, when granny passed on, then the tiny house had to be removed. So now the council and the Victorian State Government have rethought the whole process, and now they're classified as secondary dwellings, and once they're established for granny, then after granny no longer needs it, it can be rented out to the public or to a family friend or whatever.
Well, look, we are now at the stage where the baby boom generation are in their 60s, 70s and 80s. And at that time, they're widowed or they're coupled with no commitments, very few commitments, and they don't need the space of a big house. They're looking to downsize, and they're looking a simple life still in the community. They don't really want to go into one of the gated communities. And it strikes me that tiny houses are the ultimate solution. The best solution for the aging baby boomer generation.
Yeah, that's very true, Colin. What's interesting is that we have had interest with people that were going to build a tiny home in their backyard, and because they don't want to move, they own the property, and they want to downsize. So with a tiny home in their backyard, they have still got the enjoyment of their garden, their local friends, they can still walk to the shops, they're not having to move a distance away to downsize, and then they can let their house out, is what the plan is, to two other people at a reasonable rate of perhaps half what you'd have to pay to rent a house,
or perhaps hand it over to the children and grandchildren.
Well, that's very true,
Robert. One thing I'm interested, and probably most people want to know the cost of this. It seems there's so many advantages, but just looking at the cost alone, what are we up for?
Thanks, Tony. Yeah, that's the important question, and this is where we're hoping we can get a bit of interest from our politicians. But yeah, a tiny home at this stage is costing around that $100,000, And a lot of that is unfortunately the planning permit, the engineering, the energy rating, the soil testing, etc., etc. And it also depends, yeah, on the engineering, how deep the footings need to be. So it should come in at around that or a bit under that sort of figure.
When it comes to the environment, here in Geelong region, we have one, I think, very powerful and significant voice. I don't know if you follow him already. I certainly do. On Instagram, he posts videos where he's giving insightful talks. And we are lucky today to have a special Earth Day tribute from Mitch Pope.
Today is Earth Day, so I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge and reflect on the part of the Earth which has given me more in this life than I could ever give back, and that is the ocean. I've been extremely privileged to have grown up in an area where the ocean is right on my doorstep. So naturally, I've developed a deep sense of connection to the ocean and the marine environment, and some of my best and happiest memories have come from being in the ocean. So I wanted to reflect on some of them. Some of these memories include surfing in the evenings with the closest people around me, watching the sunset from in the water, floating freely along a wave where life feels simple and joyful, the countless morning and afternoon swims in the ocean to get the day started or to reconnect with the earth and myself, getting in for a body surf and becoming completely weightless, taken by the energy of a wave, photographing my friends in the surf or a sunset over the water, being underwater, totally immersed in what is a completely different world to the one that we live in, spending time noticing the life that you think should exist on a completely different planet to the one that we live on, sitting and staring out at the horizon of the ocean where things feel a little less difficult and a little more possible. The moments that I've been frustrated, low, upset, bothered, annoyed, lost, or not feeling myself, where the ocean has always brought me back to myself and absorbed any of the negative energy running through my body. The encounters with the residents and the custodians of the marine world, dolphins, gannets, seals, rays, turtles, whales, fish, and the time spent in the shores of the rock pools searching for life clinging to the rocks. The countless different forms of a single ocean that presents itself, calm, choppy, blue, pink, grey, energetic, motionless, powerful. The ocean has given me many of the memories that I cherish today and has helped me shape who I am today. But it's also given us all of the life in our bodies. 80% of the Earth's surface is water. Half of the air we breathe comes from the ocean. The ocean has absorbed our harms and pollution for decades without showing too much pain. But things are different now. Things are changing. Our Mother Ocean isn't hiding the pain anymore. Coral reefs are bleaching. Kelp forests are being lost. Ecosystems are overheating. Where parts of the ocean once sang with life, they now sit silent. For decades, we've treated our ocean and the rest of the natural world as infinite and disposable, not showing much of the care for the harm our activities are causing to the rest of life on Earth. We've polluted, dumped, pillaged, disrupted, blasted, drilled, and done more harm to the ocean than we can be forgiven for. But we have to do what we can to right our wrongs, even if we weren't the ones who caused it. So I wanted to put a call out to everyone listening. I want you to think about what the Earth has given to you, how it has impacted you and your life and been there for you and carried you through this life. And I want you to consider what you might do to help make a positive impact for the natural world, because the ocean and the rest of the living world is currently on life support. Right now is our only chance to turn things around, and we have to be the ones to do it. Fortunately, we are making some gains. They are slow gains, but they are gains. Cuts to carbon pollution, expansion of marine parks, restoration of coral reefs and kelp forests. But these things just aren't happening as fast as they need to be. So I want to call on all of us to do what we can for the health of the ocean and the living world. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for coming today and celebrating with us, marking Earth Day. The day continues and there's activities out in the community and so on. Go to our website, climatesafety.info, and you'll find a calendar there where you can see some of the events that are happening. We've reached the B section of the Sustainable Hour on an Earth Day. And Colin, Tony, what should we be today?
Oh, you should be aware of Earth Day and be aware of the way of living. Make it simple.
Yeah, be earthy. That's very much like the First Nation people. That's what guided every decision they made, was how would it affect their people in the future and their land, I guess, and their community as a whole.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's something we've got away from in so-called modern existence, but there's so many people that are dissatisfied with the way the world is functioning at the moment. There's not a whole lot of people that appreciate it. A lot of unhappiness, and that gets all turned around if we change our focus rather on exploitation, consumerism, and turn it to do no harm. I think that's what Earth Day is all about.
And I would say be together, and be responsible to all life on planet Earth.
I think I like that last bit. Be responsible. It's Earth Day. Be responsible.
It might seem like an obvious thing to say, but we need to keep saying it. Our planet is precious. The climate stability of the past 12,000 years has come to an end. And around the world, we are now suffering from the impact. At the same time, nature is declining at rates unprecedented in human history, with as many as a million species facing extinction. Fortunately, we're now better informed about the state of the world than ever before in the planet's history. And those with knowledge and the ability to innovate can provide solutions to a great number of problems. There are huge opportunities to getting things right. The only way to operate is to believe we can do something about it. And I truly think we can.
Upon this earth, but something moves beneath the waves. New understanding comes to birth. Clicks form patterns, wean into sight. Stories travel across the oceans. Carried humans come to understand their new position in the circle of life. We are not alone on planet Earth. Step we take on earth leaves a mark for those to come. Paths are forming as we walk, becoming what we will become. What's your earth mark on this earth?